FM.
Today, of course, marks World Press Freedom Day. We've talked about that just a few moments ago. In studio with us this morning, the Canadian High Commissioner to Kenya, Christopher Thornley, or Chris, as he'll be referred to from here on out on the show. Chris, welcome to Capital FM.
Thanks, Farid. It's great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. And every year, we tend to have the Canadian High Commissioner, whoever that may be at the time, in studio with us to talk about World Press Freedom and World Press Freedom Day. Now, obviously, we are part of that fraternity of journalists, if you will. I mean, I told my dad I wanted to be a journalist, and then when I became a radio presenter, he was like, this is not what I thought you meant. But anyway, but obviously we are part of that that fraternity of the press, global press. And before we get into World Press Freedom Day and how important that is for us to, you know, and I can say from an African perspective, we're pretty lucky here. We can kind of say and do what we want. I mean, you know, within reason, but I guess that would be anywhere. But before we get into that, Chris, let's talk a little bit about you. You have quite a bit of experience across the world, Africa and Asia, it seems. Tell us a little bit about your history as a High Commissioner and working for the Canadian government.
Thanks, Reid. It's great to be here. Yeah, I've had lots of experience, which means I'm old, but I've had the pleasure of serving, you know, in Europe, the U.S., Middle East. But as ambassador or high commissioner, which is basically the same thing, I've been in the Philippines, Ghana, Nigeria. So that's my Africa experience, West Africa. And I'm thrilled to be here in East Africa, seeing some of the comparisons and some of the differences between the two regions. Yeah.
Well, I spend quite a bit of time in Lagos with a different job that I do, which is television production and TV broadcasting. This is very different to Nigeria.
Very different.
I remember leaving years ago. I was leaving Lagos and I was sitting in a hotel lobby having breakfast with some South Africans who were based in Nigeria. And they're like, where are you headed to? And I said, Nairobi. And they're like, oh, that's paradise, man. I was like, yeah. Wow. You know, sort of you take a different perspective of where you live. Nigeria. What was the experience? First, let's start with the Philippines. What was the experience in the Philippines like? I mean, I find it from what I've never been, but from what I read, it seems quite a fascinating country.
It is a fascinating country. You know, it's a former Spanish colony and then one of the few places in the world that was a American colony, if there's such a thing. You know, and they gained their independence. Struggled through Second World War, occupation from Japan. So there's a lot of history there, which is quite unique. The media has its challenges in the Philippines. I mean, there is a free media, very free media, but there's also a lot of violence against media personalities. In Canada, we took a role. We had the Marshall McLuhan Prize, where we would select a prominent media person and highlight them. And I think that did a small part in sort of presenting the role of media and the responsibilities that they have. But tremendous amount of media violence, some of the highest rates of deaths of journalists in the world. And when I was there, I had the pleasure of working with Maria Ressa and getting to know her and understanding those challenges that brave journalists have in that country and many others as well.
Right. And Nigeria and Ghana, I mean, these are pretty democratic countries from an African perspective.
Yeah.
Pretty democratic countries. I would imagine in Nigeria, even if a journalist tells a story that is not a popular story from the perspective of a government, it's so many people there, it'd be very hard to find that journalist, I imagine.
That's true. You could kind of hide in plain sight, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Nigeria is a fascinating place. It's vibrant. When you live in Nigeria, and you've been there many times, you see a different side of it. You see the people, the energy of them, you know, the hardworking ethic that they have, really the creativity, the brilliance, you know, Nollywood, the tech sector. Mm. So there's two sides, and you often hear the unfortunate side of it. I think the media, again, had their challenges there, but it was free, and they were able to report, and they were pretty brave, some of them. Ghana, different story. Ghana is a more mature democracy. They're still, you know, developing economically. But the media was open there and fascinating. I think the challenges in all of these places, and we have it in Canada as well, is, and we're facing it even more now in the digital age, is responsible reporting, dealing with misinformation, disinformation, two different things. And making sure that we get the right story across and the facts, a common agreement on the facts. There seem to be various versions of the truth these days. What's the truth? So
sure.
That's a tough one.
As the former U.S. president used to say, fake news, right?
Right.
Now, if we get into Canada and Canada's role globally, we'll get into in a few minutes as well. What is... you know, I feel I grew up in the U.S. as well, and in a little bit in the U.K. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be in countries with a lot of press freedom. I'll take you back to 2000 when I joined radio here. We were given these sort of, you know, our program controllers, our bosses were like, you can't say this, you can't say that. That was under former President Moi. It seemed like overnight when Kibaki was elected president, things just completely opened up. And we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But where is Canada in terms of, you know, your global role in ensuring, because it seems, you know, first, maybe you can tell us a little bit about press freedom in Canada and how important it is to Canada as a country.
The media in Canada is very free. I mentioned Marshall McLuhan. I'm getting a little geeky here, but that's a name that journalists know, one of the leaders in sort of modern journalism, Canadian, based in Toronto. And so we've always had a very open media. I think what we struggle with right now is what I mentioned earlier is responsible media. The vast majority of Canadian reporting is of a very high standard, very responsible, but there's all kinds of different ones online right now that are presenting, you know, different versions of the truth and dealing with misinformation. We've gone through this with COVID, and it's not unique. But in February, we had a bit of a protest, many protests against COVID. I mean, our capital was occupied. Much of that was because of, I'm not going to say misinformation, but disinformation. People believing things that simply weren't true. And people are going to challenge me and say, you know, how do you know that's true? Why are you right? And so we're going through this whole debate that many other countries are as well. But generally, we have a very strong and open media, which I think has been the cornerstone of some of our successes. We've been leaders internationally. We put together with other Western countries, a coalition for media freedom. We've co-hosted, you know, two conferences. We've developed an infrastructure now internationally to push for media freedom and to put some real actions behind it and support behind it. Here in Kenya, for example, we work with the, I'm not sure if I've got the name right, but the Media Council, and we fund various groups to look at media reporting and responsible media. So we're working on it. We'd like to see more African countries engaged in this coalition. There's fewer than we'd like to see, and we'd love to see Kenya join up too. Capital
FM. In studio with us this morning is my good friend Chris. For those who don't know who Chris is, it's Chris Thornley, the Canadian. Is it High Commissioner or Ambassador? What do
High Commissioner.
High Commissioner to Kenya, the Canadian High Commissioner.
Commonwealth countries.
That's, of course, yeah. Yes. There you go. as we talk about press freedom on World Press Freedom Day, a day that's very important to many of us in this industry, this journalism or media industry, where we are given the tools to be responsible. We are given the tools to practice, like any sort of a career where you practice, be it law, be it medicine, be it media. You're not going to have a heart surgeon walk in and just throw away the rule book and say, right, I'm just going to go with my gut on this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We also have to be that responsible as well in media. And there's a, you know, before social media, there were, you know, what, four different types of media outlets, right? You know, you had newspaper, TV, radio, actually, well, three really. And now, you know, it's infinite. There are so many ways to get mess. You can do it on a Telegram group. You can do it on WhatsApp. You can do it on social media, et cetera, et cetera. Have we entered a realm in history where we have too much freedom? Because, you know, you can literally, they cut off your radio signal. You can go on social media. They cut off your internet signal. You can find other ways to do it. Have we become too free?
Yeah, that's hard to say. I don't know if it's too free. I don't know if you can ever be too free. But freedom, you know, there's a contract with freedom, and it comes with responsibility. And I think that's what we struggle with. You know, how do we monitor this? How do we ensure that there's responsibility? In the old days, when reporters were, you know, writing stories in a newspaper, there were all kinds of checks and balances to ensure that they had the right sources, that their sources were verified, et cetera, et cetera. Now anybody can say pretty much anything on social media, and it's out there, and people believe it. I don't have the answer for how that's regulated. I think, you know, the consumer has to be informed and accept what's real and what's not real. But it creates a lot of tension. And, you know, we see it everywhere. We've seen it in elections around the world. I met with a really interesting group not too long ago here in Kenya called Code for Africa, which looks at misinformation and disinformation and fights it. So misinformation is people maybe just getting it wrong, right? You know, that's one thing. It's not good, but disinformation is malicious. That's really propaganda and people, you know, trying to manipulate an outcome. And we see that with elections. We see that with foreign influences. We see it. We've seen it. We're seeing it in Kenya now, and we see it in other places. You talked about WhatsApp groups being put together, you know, with a specific message that is disinformation and wrong, and people buying into it. Mm-hmm. And that's all managed. So that's very disturbing and something that I think has to be looked at extremely carefully by governments. But how does a government manage that free media? The minute they do that, then you've got you don't have a free media anymore.
But you know, there's the theory that the Arab Spring wouldn't have happened without Facebook. Or other forms of social media, this gathering of people, these mass messages, this is where we're going to meet today at this time and occupy this square in whether it was Egypt or Tunisia, wherever it happened, in various countries that it happened in. This is a danger, obviously. And you know, let's look at it from a Kenyan perspective. We're going into an election period where we saw what happened in 2007, 2008 without social media. Is there a danger, in your opinion? Obviously, you can't be, you know, you can't predict, but is there a danger that this could end up being so social media could end up being the tool that causes more trouble than before? I mean, we saw an incredible amount of sort of groups gathering numbers in town here and across the country. Now you have social media as a tool as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm a guest here, so I'm not going to comment too much, but this is a problem everywhere. In every election, you know, we'll see it. We've had some of these issues in Canada as well. So there's absolutely a danger. And I think that's why, you know, the media has to be supported. People have to be able to make informed decisions when they're going to the voting booth. They have to be able to know what's legitimate information. And so those reporters have to be protected. They have to be given the freedoms that are necessary to be able to do their job, for Kenyan voters in this case to be making correct and informed decisions. And I think, you know, I'm optimistic. Most people are smart. You know, they can tell what's real and what isn't, and they can filter it out. And some of that, I'm not going to say mainstream media, but the free media that is responsible and informed, they need to be reporting on that disinformation as well. So that gets complicated because they're, you know, basically reporting on themselves. But you have to have that that atmosphere in Kenya where people make informed decisions about the election that helps them to make what's, you know, a good choice based on facts. But the media can play such an important role. We've gone through COVID. We've gone through an emergency. The information that the media spread on that was extremely important. And tied in back with the elections is decision makers and leaders have to be held accountable. And they have to be held accountable by responsible media, because if it's disinformation that's getting out there, that by definition is not responsible. And there's going to be no accountability for political leaders if we move too far in that direction.
And we do have that danger, of course. Here, we're going to circle back to Africa in a few minutes. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned the COVID-19 pandemic and the sort of aftermath in Canada, where this sort of occupation was happening in the capital and other cities, I think other areas as well. How much of what we got, and I'll ask you to remove yourself from having direct information, obviously, from your quote-unquote head office, but more from where we sit as a punter reading on social media and the news. And I found it quite, you know, gripping, the news. How much of that was well-curated information, and how much of that was just, you know, because you have obviously anti-government groups that are going to post anything anyway, and that happens all over the world. So how much of that, and this is the danger I'm talking about, obviously, how much of that information was legitimate if we weren't getting it directly from reliable sources?
Right. I mean, we experienced what we didn't think we were experienced. We were feeling pretty proud of ourselves. We were getting through the pandemic. We had some of the highest vaccination rates in the world, strong public health measures. But a certain segment of society, I guess, had enough of that. And they weren't willing to go with the facts, to understand that they just had to hold tight a little bit longer, that the end was near. They had had enough. And, you know, some of it was understandable. People chose not to get vaccinated. By choosing not to get vaccinated, you know, they lost their employment. So there were a lot of, like, seriously marginalized people. The answer to that, of course, is you won't be unemployed if you're vaccinated. So it's all about choices. And then they're not getting vaccinated because they're dealing with misinformation and disinformation. So all of that came to a boiling point. And there was a lot of irresponsible information on social media that was driving good people and some not so good people to make bad decisions. So we were dealing with all of that. I think in a place like Canada, it sneaked up on us. You know, you just don't think that is going to happen.
Well, unprecedented would be the word.
Unprecedented is the word. So I think there was a feeling that, okay, we'll just let this go for a little while. It was about freedom, right? People's freedom to protest. And when that intersected with people's ability to live their lives. And what really hit us, I think, was a blockade at the border. It's the biggest place for two-way trade between two countries is the Windsor-Detroit border. That bridge was blockaded. So that was huge. And both countries were feeling it. And our neighbors to the south were also experiencing some pain, and people were losing employment as a result. So action had to be taken. It was a tough time for us. And I think we will feel it for quite some time because it marginalized a number of people.
And I think it also shows that it can happen. I think that is the biggest learning, sort of learning lesson for Canada and the United States, I guess, in that respect, is that it can happen.
It can happen. It can happen quickly. I mean, I'm not going to compare the two things. We didn't have the same experience, but January 6th in the U.S. is an example, right?
Yeah. Capital FM. On your best mix of music, 98.4 Capital FM, as we continue to talk World Press Freedom Day with the Canadian High Commissioner to Kenya, Mr. Christopher Thornley, who's joined us this morning. Thank you so much for coming in, by the way. Great to have you with us. Usually on holidays, we have one presenter instead of two, so it does get a bit lonely in studio. So
thanks,
Sheree. It's nice to have you with us.
I'm glad to keep you company.
Now, as we talk more about press freedom, you know, we sometimes I feel like maybe we don't realize here in Kenya how lucky we actually are or how blessed we are. My father said, never say you're lucky, say you're blessed. So how blessed we are to have the freedom that we have. You know, I'm not saying that we can come out and start anywhere in the world. You know, if you start spreading falsehoods and untruths, you could end up in trouble, be it by some sort of fine or losing your job or perhaps jail, whatever the case may be, depending on the country. But we have a great amount of press freedom here. We've seen over the years some journalists, things happening to some of them when they come out and say things that are quite detrimental to the government or other factors. But we are quite free here. Now, I know you've only been here, you know, 2 months thereabouts. You know, from what you've seen so far, are you surprised at the freedom we have?
I'm not surprised because I'd heard about it and, you know, you're coming somewhere. So nowadays you can be looking at all kinds of sources of media online. But it is a robust and vibrant media. There's no doubt. And it's amazing that the freedom that exists and what people can say. I think, you know, a few things we have to think about, not specifically in Kenya, but around the world and Canada, too. We struggle with it a bit. Is women's participation in politics generally, but also in the media, and ensuring that women aren't disproportionately targeted. So I don't know enough about Kenya if this is true, but in some African countries and other countries around the world, women have been targeted. You know, sexual and gender-based violence comes up, sexualization of women, misogyny. So we have to be careful about that, because without more women involved in the media, and maybe they are in Kenya, I just don't know, you can tell me, you don't have that balance, you don't have that perspective. It makes for a richer media. So I think that's one thing that's super important, and overall, we'd like to see more involvement in that, and that ties in with Canada's foreign policy of a feminist international policy that we have.
Right.
So that's important. And I'd like to see more of it. Overall, Kenyan media is very interesting, very free, whether in some cases it's too free, and that line with responsible reporting, I think we struggle with that everywhere.
Right. Kenyans on Twitter is one of the biggest Twitter sort of like, what's the word? One of the quickest Twitter groups to mobilize globally, or at least in Africa. Now, you talked about the coalition. So just explain a little about what this coalition, what's the role of this coalition?
Well, Canada and the UK actually have come together, and now there's a lot of other countries involved. We sponsored two international conferences in 2019 and 2020. We know what happened in 2020, so things went virtual after that for a little while, to bring countries together and to look at how we can have a freer media everywhere around the world, and not just, you know, in the developing world, not just in Africa, but in our own countries as well. So I think by coming together, we've been able to shine a spotlight on some of the challenges. Whether we can come up with solutions, there's many times we know what the solutions are, but implementing them is very difficult. I mean, do you regulate the internet? Do you want to regulate the internet? Is that even possible? Who knows? Elon Musk might have the answer. I don't know, but somehow I kind of doubt it. So that's what we're struggling with. It's growing. We're picking up new members. I think that's important because there's a kind of accountability and answerability, if that's a word, between the various members, and you have to, you know, show good standing. We'd like to see more African members. Kenya's not a member yet. We hope they'll become so. There's only really a handful of African members, including countries like Ghana, which were involved right at the beginning. But with Kenya's media and Kenya's openness and its vibrant political and social atmosphere, I think there's a great possibility to get them on board.
Right. And the coalition's role, I mean, what is the end game is obviously to create a space where media is responsible but free as an end game?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, you know, deliverables that come about. And with these kind of international organizations and groupings, it's voluntary, right? There's no enforcement. I mean, even with the UN, so much is really through moral suasion. But I think once a country makes that decision to come on board, they've said that they're going to ensure as free a media and as responsible a media as possible. And by not coming on board, they're not necessarily saying the opposite message, but they're not coming out and saying, you know, we're part of this and we accept a free media and we will support a free media and do everything we can to make sure that it's inclusive and responsible.
And as we head into, our election period in August, obviously now with only a few months left before we hit the polls and vote, how important is freedom for the press and how important is responsible journalism?
Yeah, they're both important, but they both have to be balanced, right? So without freedom, you won't get people having the ability to report in an impartial way and to present the voter with the facts so they can make an informed decision, whatever that decision might be. That's their privilege in a democracy to make that. But you want it to be based on facts. And, you know, without the responsibility, they could be making decisions based on untruths, based on misinformation and disinformation. Yeah, so that's a very important balance. Freedom is absolutely important, but it has to come with responsibility.
Right. Okay, Christopher Thornley, thanks for joining us this morning. Happy World Press Freedom
Day.
Thanks,
Reid.
And welcome to Kenya. And of course, I'm sure next time you're here, you'll have had more wonderful experiences, which you'll share with us.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Capital FM.